This is Simon Arthur for Big Blue Saw. I'm speaking today with Igor Knezevich, the mind behind Alienology, a Los Angeles-based design studio. Alienology makes use of modern manufacturing techniques like 3D printing, water jet cutting, and laser cutting to produce lighting fixtures and jewelry, among other things. Big Blue Saw did the water jet cutting for Alienology's aluminum lampshade called the Orbit. So, Igor, are you selling any of the Orbit lampshades?
Yes, I am. I actually sold one today to the local attorney, a young attorney who's remodeling his house. He's been recommended by an architect who knows of my work. And so this is how it goes at this point. I mean, I'm not obviously selling large number of them because, number one, I didn't even make large number of them. As far as I know, you actually made six so far. One was a prototype in thicker aluminum, and that still hangs on my ceiling here, and then five on the first round, but I pretty much sold all five.
Okay.
And that's why I ordered it. That's why I ordered another 10 from you. My business is going pretty well. I mean, I'm making effort a lot to design many different things, you know, lighting and some jewelry and all, but mostly using 3D printing or laser cutting or water jet cutting or CNC, that kind of stuff. So that's kind of what I'm limiting myself, you know, to make a product that are kind of, makeable in one process, you know. So far I didn't really go forward and said, like, okay, I can do this part by using 3D printing and then this part by using water jet, but that's coming up. So, you know, there is this logic I'm having in my design now as to, especially as far as laser cutting is going or water jet cutting, is that I try to make it out of a single sheet of material. All pieces in, say, the lamp are out of that same material, and ideally all these pieces will lock in into a certain pattern on a flat sheet so that I, you know, have minimum material waste.
Okay.
And, you know, there is, of course, reasons for me to do it because I pay less for material and et cetera, but it's also, I think, good, you know, for environment and so on, because I really don't like to throw half, you know, of material that I paid for away. And it just, you know, goes in landfill.
Sure.
And so that's why some of these lamps look as they do. You know, I mean, obviously I can go in and create any possible shape to the limits of laser cutter or water jet cutter, but they are as they are because, you know, I go constantly back and forth between looking how they look in 3D once they are, you know, snapped together, or in case of Orbit lamp, once when it kind of folds away, and how it can be made in 2D, you know.
Sure.
So that's why they look as they are now. I mean, there's other things I'll be making and stuff that I didn't get to yet to actually make, but that's going to be a different logic. However, you know, I just feel that certain designs, if you look, you know, back in the 50s and 60s, you know, when Alvar Aalto was doing his wood furniture as a Finnish designer and architect, you know, there is this nature of wood coming through in his designs. Because I believe, you know, every material has its demands and reasons, you know, and also, in my case, especially every manufacturing process, you know, digital manufacturing process, which is what you do, is there is its nature to it. You know, there's certain things that should be made like that. And in my case, I'm thinking that, well, because you can have such a precision and repeatability of every part, then let's try to pack them tight, and then how does that, you know, influence the form once it's done? And so that's it. And of course, on the other hand, as well, is that because, you know, that then the scale of manufacturing is different. In other words, you know, it costs me not much different if I make 10 exactly the same lamps or 10 slightly different lamps.
Sure.
You know? So in that sense, probably next thing what I'll do, I'm right now revising this Orbit lamp to be slightly more elliptical, et cetera, et cetera. So it's, you know, for me as a designer, it's very easy to change that. You know, I mean, these are, of course, not huge changes, but, you know, for a customer, you can just say, well, look, I have, like, you know, four different versions of it.
Right. So
that certainly makes a huge difference. So, you know, it just appears that you have so much done, you know. And that, you know, in a traditional manufacturing was very difficult too.
Right. How about how many designs do you have right now?
right now, I mean, of the size that you can available that are, you know, available to buy, I have, I believe, 5 or 6 lamps. And then if you look at my side, there's a bunch of this 3D printed jewelry. There's another maybe 5 or 6 of those. Okay. And these are things that are right here, right now. One can order them like now and I can, you know, send them next day. There's many more things coming. And, some of them are certain like clocks, more lighting, and then, some kind of foldable shelves that you can kind of, you know, stick in a wall and just by screwing like 1 or 2 pins and then it kind of stays up there and kind of flexible. You can make a grid on a wall or put them every which way just to put some small items. Actually, the way I designed that was I need now space to put all this stuff. You know, I have like pretty nice empty walls here in my studio, so I want to put the stuff up on the wall to kind of free up my space on the tables and all that. And so I'm kind of, well, why should I go up and buy some? Let's just design some, you know. And so I'm not working on that. But yeah, there is a, you know, a bunch of products already available, and that's the one decision I made. You know, I've been to the, you know, Milan Design Festival like 3 years ago and 2 years ago exhibited something there, and then I went because I did some video commercial or directed some video for Italian company and stuff. So I was there and that was shown in the Milan Design Festival. You know, that's the biggest in the world. And then I was in London and all these places. I've been, you know, I've been seeing what younger designers are doing. And one thing that was kind of confusing to me, is that it is wonderful stuff to see. I mean, it's really amazing. You know, a lot of them are students or graduate students and stuff. So this is really impressive stuff to see. But whoever I ask, you know, okay, now this lamp is great, you know, can I buy it? You know that I have all that much money, but can I just buy it and how? Well, invariably, you will get an answer sort of like, well, you know, this is a prototype, and now we are looking for a manufacturer and distributor. And, you know, after talking, there was a part of this huge Milan Design Week, which is called the Salones Satellite, Satellite Salon, right? And that's where they exhibit the younger designers, you know, under 30 or so, 35, and students and stuff. Sort of you, like, send your stuff, and they, you know, some jury is choosing, and, you know, some, again, really, really nice stuff. But I would say I was talking to every single exhibitor there, you know, young guys, approachable and all that. Pretty much, I think everyone, like up to 95% would tell me the same thing. You know, we are looking for manufacturer and distributor. And I, like, went out of there thinking, well, I don't know, am I crazy or are they crazy? Because chances they will actually find a manufacturer and well, okay, finding a manufacturer is not all that hard if you have money to pay for it. But most of them don't. Finding a distributor and a company that will actually license that from you is like, you know, it's just like releasing a music CD, you know, I mean, who's gonna, it's a slim chance. And I went out of there thinking, well, you know what? When I do my stuff, I'm just going to make it. I'm going to just make it. It must be available for sale. You know, what's the point in making an endless series of prototypes and then looking for somebody to license to? Because, you know, once you license stuff out, you're lucky if you get, you know, maybe 4 to 7% of sale. Now, that's great if you sell, you know, 5 million pieces of your lamps, but good luck with that. I mean, that doesn't happen very often. And the big companies work like that way. I think this whole new time is coming where the, you know, manufacturer like you can help us designers to do our little short series of objects that we can revise frequently and improve them. And then I, as a designer, could go on the business side as well and say, look, you know, now I have it available. So I decided after that show to basically go out and whatever I'm going to show on my site, on that alienology.com site, that's going to be only photos, so no computer renderings or very little computer renderings, but only products that are fully available that you can go there and click on, you know, PayPal or whatever and purchase them now. And that's the difference, you know, that you and, you know, Pinocchio and some Shapeways and all these guys I'm using are making. You know, I'm just kind of refusing just to show my ideas, and people say, you know, I'm trying to learn about business side as well. It's a completely different game, and for any younger designer, you better try it because it's not what they tell you, you know. But at least the manufacturing and making side of my products is now much easier than than when I first tried it, say, 5 years ago.
Right.
So that's the huge difference, huge. Now, you know, how to sell all that and get a lot of money for it is a whole other story. I mean, there's a problem there, but, you know, these problems would be there anyway, so.
So tell me a little bit about your background as far as design. Do you have formal training in doing industrial design and that sort of thing?
Not really. I'm an architect.
Okay.
I have formal training in architecture. Okay. But I was always doing design and doing design competitions and stuff. And then I lived in Europe for like 5-6 different countries after leaving my, you know, original country of Yugoslavia, which now, of course, is 6 different countries due to the war. So technically I'm from Yugoslavia, but, you know, when people ask me now, I'm from Croatia.
Right.
You know, used to be Yugoslavia back in the 90s. And studied in Vienna, Austria, and in Germany. And through all that time, I was doing a lot of computer graphics, a lot of 3D rendering and architectural concept design, and for hotels, casinos, and theme parks, and stuff like that. Because I was lucky enough to be trained in hand drawing, so I'm pretty good sketcher, right? So I can do a quick, you know, storyboard and just quick hand sketches, which is right now actually the most important thing I feel I have as a skill. Because, you know, knowing the software tools is important and it's cool, but sooner or later everybody will know that. And then as a designer, you need to be able to communicate the idea at a really early stage. And so I feel even now that hand sketching is the best way to go.
So you when you have an idea, you start with pencil and paper, is that it?
Pretty much, I would say 90% of the time, that's the way. Sometimes, though, I do use some advanced pieces of software, like that maybe you heard of Processing or Grasshopper. That's a plugin that runs in Rhino.
Right.
You should check that out. It's processing.org and I think grasshopper3d.com. It's a plugin for Rhino, and Processing is a whole little scripting language. And these are kind of parametric tools that create, enable you to create these kind of biological forms or very kind of patterns and so on. I mean, you can technically sketch that, of course, but the problem with that is that you can't really imagine that kind of, these kind of forms. And so I highly encourage you to look at those sites at some stunning examples of just aesthetic beauty, right? I mean, it's kind of hard sometimes to understand, well, how can I now translate this into a product? But in my case, sometimes I do use things to do some jewelry pieces, and it could be lighting. Then again, like anything could be lighting when you think about it. That's why it's so cool to do lighting, right?
Sure.
So sometimes, you know, I'm pretty amazed by these forms that come out kind of semi-randomly while working in a computer application. And I mostly use either 3D Studio Max or Rhino, or both at the same time. I'm just trying, you know, go between one and another. And sometimes I'm using those tools to get to the forms that are kind of really kind of out there. And there's not much to see now on my website, but I'm currently doing some 3D prints of fairly large size lampshades that are made, and that's kind of looking pretty outlandish. The only problem with that is that, I mean, I want to have them because it's really nice eye candy, but that's going to be expensive. I don't think people would actually go and buy it so easily. But I just figured that, you know, it's good to have some of these, you know, interesting, outlandish pieces just to, you know, because marketing-wise, you have to get your stuff in magazines and the blogs so people to pay attention, you know. And, so that's sometimes when I use fully digital workflow when I don't sketch. But most of the time, I have preconceived idea as to how this lamp should be. And, you know, I don't necessarily start with how it should look at the end, but like these, you know, if you look at the bloom lamp and the spore lamp, the laser cut, I knew I wanted to do a pattern that it's kind of repeatable. It's going to kind of rotate around the core, and they need to interlock, you know, on a flat sheet, and, you know, just sketched it for a couple of days. And I'm still, there is a few possible family of shapes that will do that. You know, in this case, they're like a zigzag shape or gentle curves. And then I model this in 3D. And, you know, tweak this, you know, width and height and see what extra thickness of materials I could use and so on. And then it looked pretty good. And then I just went off to laser cut it and it worked pretty much at the first try. Right now, though, I am revising the way they slot together, because right now it's just like a, you know, push slot. They just push, they click in, and it works pretty remarkably well, except that it's, you know, it's not 100% foolproof. If you really go at a kick at that lamp for a repeatable time, it will detach, right?
Okay.
Which is, I would say, okay for 99% of customers, but I think I figured out a different way to click in. So when you put the last piece in, it will then lock, and then you can't really pull them apart anymore. So that's probably going to be next job I'm going to send to laser cut to test that out. And I also sourced out the better plywood to use with it. By the way, you know, one of the biggest issue now I have with these kind of, because, you know, you are not in L.A. or, you know, most people that cut this for me are not local. And the biggest problem I'm having is not, pretty much all the cuts are really well done. No problem there. Machines there, and you guys are doing a good job. But materials are sometimes different. In other words, you order the same material, but it's not exactly the same.
Right. Yeah.
And that's the, you know, but I don't really expect it to be resolved anytime soon. I mean, it's hard, you know, especially in America when they tell you it's quarter inch plywood, which, you know, in millimeters would be like what, like almost 6 millimeters or something.
Right.
It almost never is that.
Right, yeah.
And there is a variability in thickness of materials, you know, plus minus 15%. That's like a manufacturer's limit. And for my lamps, because they're slotted together, you know, in 3D, that's an issue.
Yeah.
And you rarely get, you know, I wish manufacturers would just, you know, European guys are much more precise as far as that goes. At least, you know, I mean, you know, they tell you it's like 5.5 millimeter plywood, and it is 5.5.
Interesting.
Or, you know, it's like a 5.4. I mean, it's not, you know, they also have their variability. But, I mean, I've seen here in the local shops, and there are some pretty good plywood, you know, wood shops here. You know, they just put this in a quarter-inch slot there. And I go around with the caliper, and I realize, well, this wood is 5 millimeters, and this out there is 6.5 millimeters. It's a huge difference. And they are both called quarter-inch. So in other words, if I find great bamboo plywood from which I actually want to do these lamps in the future, I don't want to use plywood because bamboo is, you know, green material, recyclable and all that. Or rather, it's not recyclable, but it's renewable, right? It grows much faster than trees and so on. So I want to use bamboo. Number one, it is a bit more expensive, so I'm going to have to increase price of my lamp, but still it's going to be cheap. However, the biggest problem is, you know, to find exact bamboo that is, I don't know, say 5 millimeters thick that I want or whatever. Yeah, the thickness of it varies a lot. You know, even from the same manufacturer within the same batch. So, like, for me, the biggest headache now is can I get extra service so that, you know, somebody will actually go and choose, okay, for this guy, Igor, we'll choose, you know, these 5 boards of 4x8, and let's just caliper them out, you know, let's just see if they're really 5.5.
Right.
You know, because otherwise, if it's not, that's going to be screwed up. And it's just, you know, doing this kind of remote manufacturing, that little piece is still missing. And I kind of don't really realistically expect it, because that's probably would be a lot of work for you. But it's probably what a lot of people will feel as a problem, you know.
Sure.
Because, and it's not, you know, you are buying these materials yourself, so manufacturers are not exactly very consistent in how materials look. And I'm talking now about wood and stuff. Metal is more or less all right, and acrylics, of course, are kind of almost always the same, even though thickness varies in acrylics too. But
yeah.
At least their appearance from the outside is all right. The wood is probably, but wood is like, the thickness is almost never the same, and appearance also changes. I mean, they just use like different veneer on the outside, and then you get the lamps that are just darker or brighter, you know. And so, but, you know, whatever. So far, though, you know, it was pretty much acceptable, most of the stuff that I did. I mean, I'm talking now Ponoco, because my lamps were laser cut there. And as far as what you did, the Orbit, I mean, the aluminum is just fine. It was pretty much consistent, and it just worked, so.
Well, tell me a little bit about the piece you had made with us, the Orbit Lamp. What was the inspiration for that piece?
Right, inspiration was just, again, to I was intrigued by having the flat sheet of material. These are just these core cuts, right? There's no cut out pieces, other than center. So I'm wasting minimal material, and I was intrigued by basically creating a simple geometry that end user can fold up and down in whatever way the user wants, and just stick it on any lamp. So basically, that the thing is hanging on the glass body of a light bulb, which is kind of unusual. And of course, the light bulbs get hot, but so what? Because we have aluminum, which tends to that heat. Transfers onto aluminum and dissipates right away, so it actually works really well, right? It's very lightweight aluminum, so it doesn't have, so you can basically replace any household chandelier or ceiling mounted thing with this. And it, and because aluminum is reflective too, when you kind of, I usually sand it a little bit to get these kind of scratches onto it. And the light disperses, creates really interesting patterns on the wall. So in a sense, it's a combination of that kind of geometry, which when you fold the lamp, it looks like arcs of a circle or parabolas. And then they create the similar arcs and circles on the wall or in the ceiling. It's, it becomes more than what it is. And of course, when I mail it to the customer, when I send it, I send it flat. So you can mail it for like $5 anywhere, because it's flat. You send like an old LP record.
Right.
It's a little bit larger than that.
Right.
So, and by the way, shipping is one of the biggest problems for such an independent, guy who's selling stuff on my own like I do, because to send one assembled lamp, say, from here to Germany like I did, and if you want to choose FedEx, good luck. That's going to cost you $120.
Right.
In FedEx calls. So there. If you send it flat through FedEx, you can send it for like 25, if you're lucky. If you use USPS, which is slower and there's no tracking number, you can sometimes send it for like $15.
Sure.
And by the way, so in other words, all I'm saying is that if this lamp is, X number of dollars, like the big store lamp is $180, that's the other one from the woods, and it's pretty big when you assemble it. To send this assembled somewhere costs you more than $100 always, and nobody's going to pay for that.
And on top of that, you've got to worry about packing it just so that it won't break, right?
Well, exactly. So the idea is that all my stuff is flat pack, everything, other than jewelry, of course, but then these are small pieces, right?
Sure.
So all these lamps, and they will continue being flat pack, meaning I send them disassembled, sort of like IKEA, but of course I'm trying not to be so difficult to assemble like IKEA.
Right.
In other words, I just want to slot them together, click and goodbye. But, I am warning people that, you need about 15, 20 minutes to put these together, but it's simple. And so far nobody really complained. Nothing broke so far. And of course, in the case of Orbit lamp that you guys cut, you just fold it. That you can do in 30 seconds.
Yep.
But I do tell them, of course, that, don't fold it more than once or twice because you're going to break the piece off.
Yep.
Aluminum will not take that.
Yep.
So in other words, I say, you better, look at it, think about how you want it, fold it, and that's it. Don't refold it because, a material will break. There's nothing I can do about it, And so far nobody called me back to tell me it is broken, but it probably will happen at some point, but I send a nice sheet of paper, remember, it's aluminum, you can't fold it 20 times, once, so.
So tell me a little bit about the business side. Do you get most of your customers through your website?
It's locally here. What I'm doing now is actually, I decided not to push it's hard to push a website, right? You can send your stuff to blogs and so on, but it's so much information out there, right? That even if some major blog is featuring my work, which happened to me a couple of times, you have extreme interests in that day or next day and stuff, and then everybody forgets about it. So another way, the problem that I'm seeing with internet-based shops is that how do you get audience in? It's really difficult. Very difficult. I mean, people, attention span right now is like, you know, a minute. That's it. And that's another thing, you know, I'm kind of hesitating with that because I want to perfect my products and I want to have, you know, a number of them available. So if people order, you know, if some big blog, design blog features them or some magazine and stuff and I get, you know, 20 orders in a day, well, I better have them to send them right there. Or at least to tell them, well, I have them in a week. Because longer than that, people won't wait. And, on the other hand, though, I found a whole new respect for local design shops that are still alive. At least some of them are, even though economy, a bunch of them closed in L.A. Good thing with that is that, you know, once people walk in such a design shops, they are about to buy something, or at least they're interested. They are, you know, specifically interested about design. And my lamps, including the Orbit Lamp, is in, you know, two shops in L.A. and one in San Francisco. And pretty much, and not only that, I mean, some pieces of jewelry and stuff, that all works on consignment right now. So rarely they will just go in and buy lamps from me to sell. That actually may happen now because two of those shops, pretty much whatever I brought them, whether it's jewelry or lamps, they sold at least one or two of those, or of each product. So they are relatively impressed about how well that was received, right? So then I told them, look, why don't we do this? I mean, you know, it's a lot of legwork for me to wait and call you and see what's going on. Why don't you, you know, can you just buy like a 3 lamp from me on wholesale prices and that's it, right? And one of them said yes. So, but generally, if you go in a local design shops, they will take, if they like it, they will take the lamps and you will just leave it with them. They will sell it. When they sell it, you get half. They take half. They take 50%, which a lot of younger designers don't realize. It's a huge deal, you know, and that's normal. Some people can take more. So in other words, if my lamp is, I don't know, $200, I only get 100. And of course, I have my making costs. And then technically, you know, I would have to pay taxes on it, which you pretty much have to. And so, you know, making a profit on this is not that easy. On the other hand, you keep your same price, your $200 on your website as well. And then if you sell it through the website, then you keep all the money, which is why the web store is a perfect idea. But again, the biggest problem is people, you know, it's hard to find. You know, there are a lot of stores selling lamps, a lot of people selling jewelry, and then it seems to me it just takes time to build up that reputation, right? But I find showing stuff on a local, you know, local shops really gives you nice exposure. And what I really like is that people comment, and I hear comments from the sellers. So I hear good and bad, but in my case, I gotta tell you, mostly good. So I'm really encouraged by it. You know, I mean, having a store on the web is really like anonymous. You know, you don't really connect with your customer. Sometimes it is just on the.
Right. So I'm almost out of time. So what if people did want to find out more about your work and wanted to see it, they can go to your website, which is?
It's alienology.com. It's, this is Alienology. It's like a little bit of a weird name, but it's a dear name to me. That's too long of a story. And so that's Alienology, alienology.com.
Alienology.com.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's right.
All right. Thank you very much, Igor.
Thanks, Simon, so much. And I will, you know, hopefully talk to you soon.
That was designer Igor Knezovich. For Big Blue Saw, I'm Simon Arthur.